Okay, folks, we'll come to the next talk now. Community-based immersion, hopefully not as a result of the canoe racing. So,
Kevin, start with some
Kevin Batcher.
Yeah. Yeah, shall talk tiling together. So this talk is about Hulk Commitment. Hulk Commitment, often referred to as Halkomelem, is a member of the Salishan language family spoken in the Pacific Northwest. It is a Coast Salish language spoken on both sides of the Salish Sea, in the area around Vancouver and up the Fraser River Valley, as well as on southeastern Vancouver Island, roughly in the area between Victoria and Nanaimo. This talk is based on data from the island dialect. Okay, so Halkomelem is an endangered language. The community would like the youth to gain fluency, and the youth is definitely interested to do so too. However, they hardly ever find time to go to the classroom. So my idea was that if the youth won't come to language courses, then let's just bring the language courses to them. So this project piggybacks Halkomelem language learning and existing cultural practices. So where are the kids if they aren't in the classroom? I mean, where else would you want to be, right? At least in the summer, they spend a lot of time on the water paddling. Canoe poling enjoys vast popularity, not only among the Coast Salish people, but I think we can say in the cultural area of the Pacific Northwest in general. It's definitely not exaggerated to compare canoeing in those cultures to soccer in Europe or South America. This project started out as a documentation work, but it soon became clear that the type of data about canoeing had a strong potential for language immersion. Now, what makes this environment so attractive? First of all, students learn actively without having to sit in a classroom, so it's much more fun than going to a classroom. Students do not have to make extra time for language courses because they go to the training anyway. Highly respected coaches can teach the language, that's an important point. There's lots of repetition involved. Canoeing appeals to various senses, and also very importantly, canoeing ties into a very long tradition. I just mentioned that canoeing mainly takes place in the summer. That's because in the winter, people are busy with activities in the longhouse. We can say that canoe poling and spirit dance seasons are indeed complementary to each other. Interestingly, the most CM, or honorable, respected spiritual and political leaders, often also coach canoe poling. And in fact, the community leaders, including most chiefs, have been canoe polers themselves. So canoe poling is definitely linked to prestige. The goals of this project is to provide language materials to the coaches to use as part of their training. But not only that, we want to make the materials available for the paddlers too, and gather it all, make it available on a web page. And we don't only want to make to give Halkomelem equivalents to what the paddlers already know, but instead provide reference materials about technique, sportsmanship, safety, history, marine life, etc. So the aim is that paddlers will consult the webpage not only for the language content, but will inevitably also immerse into Halkomelem by looking information like that up. So what data gets on the webpage? Fortunately, there's been quite extensive documentation of Halkomelem before that my project can build upon. That documentation was mainly conducted by Tom Hukari from UVic and Donna Gertz, who's my supervisor. They've been working for decades with a vast number of speakers in an effort to document the diminishing oral history of the Halkomelem community. Now, in that previous research, canoe poling has been a recurrent topic because of its popularity. Now, the aim of my project is to pull all the material together and make it accessible on one site, and then gather more specialized data beyond that. We already have lots of video recordings of training and races. We have stories related to all aspects of canoe poling, phrases used in canoe poling, vocabulary lists, etc. So the web page is still in its infancy, and we constantly add material, so it's rapidly growing. However, at least part of the web page is planned to be open to the public. At least part of the web page is planned to be open to the public, we could not make it publicly accessible yet because we need to check the appropriateness of some of its content with the elders. And that's very important. I will shortly explain why in just a minute. For the time being, you can leave your contact information if you want, if you're interested in the project. That will keep you posted about any updates. Nevertheless, I can still give you a general impression of how the web page is structured, and I will use the rest of my time today for that. So the web page has the following main categories: Salish canoes, canoe pulling, at the races, marine environment, and more on the language. I'm going to give you an insight into each of these. So let's start with Salish canoes. Each of the main categories is further subdivided into topics that lead you to the actual texts and recordings. Let's start with some general information about the cultural significance of canoe pulling in Coast Salish society. Canoes were traditionally used in almost every aspect of daily life. They were used for fishing and hunting, trading, warfare, visiting relatives. Often they had huge companies paddling to potlatches, sometimes quite far away. Canoes were also used for physical training, obviously, and for spiritual practice. Yet canoe pulling is much more than just a mundane activity. First of all, canoes are crafted out of the red cedar, which is the wood used for all culturally significant objects, including the longhouse, baskets, blankets, and so forth. Importantly, any type of work that is related to the red cedar, or chpeik, as they say, is sacred. You need to have a clear mind when you sit into a canoe. That's where purification rituals come into play. Exposing such material to outsiders is absolutely taboo, and this is the reason why we need to be extra careful and cross-check with the elders before we can make any material publicly available. Furthermore, canoes and paddles show up as motifs in all sorts of rituals, including memorials, the invitations to which are usually engraved in small wooden paddles, like this one here. Similar wooden paddles are also embellish a sort of ritual piece of clothing called the paddle shirt, and the list goes on. So even beyond that, canoe pulling and travel by water is omnipresent in Coast Salish culture in different domains. First of all, at least one whole system of orientation relies on waterways, and I'm going to be giving some examples for this later on. Canoe pulling is also a common metaphor used for community project because it emphasizes teamwork, making progress, getting along, and so on. And canoeing is also the whole orientation within the canoe is projected onto modern day cars. I'm gonna give you some examples of how that works. So the word for canoe is snohuatl, and that's also the word used for car. Although some people use ka, but most often they say snohuatl. So to get onto a canoe is al. They say al, and that's also how you say to get into a car or onto a car, as they say, because they even project that into English. And then there's a derivation from al, state of resultative form, ala'al, which means to be aboard a canoe, and it also means to be in a car or on a car. And then sklan means the bow or the front of a ship, and it also means the front of the car, so on. So canoe races are a big event, not only for the paddlers, but also for the whole community. Races bring together different tribes from a really big area. The whole family travels with the paddlers, and they barbecue at the race sites. They play the bone games there, and they're having a good time there, and they spend a lot of money on that too. So it's really important to them. So now let's move on to another category after cultural significance and zoom in on parts of the canoe. This shows how, with the use of pictures and sound files, the use of English in certain domains becomes completely obsolete. You don't need to give the English if you have something like that. You can just, you know, you see where what is, and you can listen to
it.
Right. Exploration. All right, let's now listen to a short narrative from Arnold Guerin about how to build a canoe.
Nem saitem tamak. So nem saitem tis lalans nem shapkstem. Tamakstem ksnem shus shnachol amash tis klans itis ilek.
So you can see that the narrative is segmented into short clauses that can all be listened to separately. Hokomitnam and English are lined up to make it easy to follow. Of course, this is only a short excerpt of the talk, and the original text that is on the website is longer. All right, so after each narrative on the website, there's a vocabulary list with the key words that are parsed in a way to make it understandable to non-linguists. Oh, and by the way, we use the practical orthography here in the IPA, or APA, which is used otherwise for linguistic publications, because that's what they learn in school too. I have highlighted certain recurring patterns that a learner naturally acquires by repetition. In orange, we see the usage of different voices and transitive markers. The green markings show how the possessive construction is repeatedly used. And the occurrence of lexical suffixes, or, you know, it's kind of like incorporated nouns, is marked blue. So the only one that occurs here is the one for nose or tip of something. But, you know, in the whole text and in other texts, there are many more of those. All right, so let's move away from general information about canoes to canoe pulling itself. Again, this category is subdivided into sections. And we can have a closer look at commands and encouraging them. So, of course, this is a domain that can be extensively used, exploited during the practices. Listening to the samples, you can hear how excited our consultant Willie Seymour got himself recollecting his own races.
That was Charlton.
Really shouted into the mic at some point. We're just tuning. Yeah, so it's really fun for the consultants too, because it's really popular.
You saw the chest Charlton squishy awkward to come along up to the chair, but come with it. Come with it, chair.
All right, now let's listen to Willie Seymour, the same consultant, telling a story about the course of one race that he remembered particularly vividly.
Mm-hmm. You want to know me to Malach? Or to twill would do to the last of Malach, Miss Timo. Swallowless, she's a child. Taco, hello, Kitlu, Nisal, Sneech, Kishakwatab.
Sorry. I'd have to break it up so, because if I change the slide, I won't play the.
We need to tell Nook to ask us.
So again, I marked in orange in this these keywords here, how Willy uses different suffixes for voice and agreement alternations. Such information is especially accessible to the learner if the forms are alternations of the same verb. So for example, we can see that aquat occurs here with the first person plural passive suffix, and later on it occurs as there's a first person plural object marker, and then right up here, and then here the transitive marker for third person objects. Yeah. Now moving on to the category at the races. Let's have a look at the sort of data I collected for race locations. So as with the parts of the canoe, we don't really need the English equivalents here since the map shows you the place. Again, we have the Halkomitnam in written form and the corresponding audio file.
Shemenis.
Which is Shemenis in English.
Kalpalis.
That's Kawachimbe.
Malachat.
Malahat. And Squamish, which is in North Vancouver. Oops, let me play that.
Squamish.
All right. I'll skip this one. Okay. So, as for marine environment, I thought that due to time constraints, I won't go into further detail about this. But it's a relevant topic and it's very popular too. Instead, let's have a glance into the category more on the language. So this category is subdivided into the following sections: speeches, prayers, positions, directions, counting, vocabulary, and other stories. In other stories, we link to other web pages that we have. You know, there's lots of stories that are all related to canoeing in some way, but which don't primarily deal with canoeing. So we just give a link here. Vocabulary. That includes all the vocabulary from all the narratives, all gathered in one point. So it's like the dictionary of the web page. Okay, so let's have a look at directions. As I said before, there's a whole system of motion verbs that are related to waterways. In fact, Halkomitnam is very rich in such verbs, in motion verbs. For example, tile, go upstream, and wak, go downstream, are often used, but also unaccusative verbs like kos, to get submerged in water, and derivatives thereof. Counting. All right. So Halkomitnam has a rather large set of classifiers, and many different ones are employed in the context of canoeing. For instance, the ones for counting people, canoes, paddles, and teams. So as an example, whereas the number three in isolation is klih, three people is tuela, three canoes is tuawal, three paddles is tuelwas, and three teams is tuamat. So, I constantly talked about we because my supervisor Donna Gertz is at least as much involved in this project as I am, and I couldn't do it myself. And I'm very helpful that she provides her information and her data for this project. So, but what we want to do in the future is we want to invite more paddlers to participate in the oral histories, and this shouldn't be a big problem because speakers are really eager to help because of the significance of canoe pulling in the culture. We want to bring coaches together and teach them how to use the material in the practices. We've talked to separate, you know, to single coaches now, but we didn't gather them all at one place. But I think it's about time to do so now. The canoeing season starts in around March, April. So we want to get them all together in one room and show them all the material that we have. So, and definitely want to continue involving young people and teaching them research skills. We worked together with the great grandchildren of our main consultant, and we went to the archives together with them, and which is where we gathered all of these photos from newspapers, local newspapers. So what's very interesting is that most of the pictures that you can see here are relatives of the people in that community, so they can really relate. Okay, so concluding, from a didactic point of view, canoeing is a perfect vehicle for language learning. It is culturally highly significant, it is highly popular with young and old speakers alike, and it addresses and involves youth. From a linguistic point of view, talking about canoe pulling involves a rich language register. Semantically, canoe pulling is related to virtually every aspect of native life. Morphologically, a wide variety of patterns shows up, including numeral classifiers, voice alternations, imperatives, and we also saw, by the way, plural imperatives before. I didn't point out to that, but yeah, there's all sorts of different structures, imperfectives, plural forms of nouns and verbs, and so on. And documentation yields both vocabularies and stories. So canoe pulling is appropriate for all levels of learners. All right, that was it. Just in time. Hi, Zev.
Questions for Kevin?
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, guys. It's a very exciting project. Very neat to see. I was also remember a couple of years ago. I don't know if you know the animator artist. They did a project with this Panemo community on animation for canoe pulling.
Yeah.
For the training too. So the, like, in terms of food and training, I wasn't sure.
Animations.
The animation one, yeah.
They didn't put it on the Sinanemu homepage, did they? Because they have all sorts of language material there.
I don't know.
I just saw them do a
presentation
like this.
What? Yeah.
It was the Andy Everson and his brother. So
Andy Everson.
Yeah,
oh,
so that would be, like, so that kind of fits in with what you're doing.
Right, that's very interesting. What we actually intend to do is not, animations is, of course, good, but we're trying to get actual recordings of people teaching, you know, the different canoe strokes too. It's very complex. I mean, I used to do rowing myself, but you know, they have all sorts of different prying moves and stuffs. You know, different stroke types, and so we have recordings of races, but we wanna get the coaches and the paddlers recorded actually demonstrating the different moves, right? Yeah, there was another question.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. You've got this web page you're developing,
yeah.
And you have this audience for the web page, the paddlers and the coaches, yeah. Other people. Have you gotten them involved in the design of the web page, architecture, the categories you're using, stuff like that?
Yes. We're working together with several people. I can't design the web page on my own, but I'm like, it's more like a community project, and we, you know, we'll work together and give everybody gives their ideas in.
It's a cultural artifact. a web page is a cultural artifact.
Yeah.
If you're kind of crossing cultural boundaries, it really makes a lot of sense to make sure that you
right.
get input from both sides.
We definitely have that, yeah. Right. Yes.
Have you thought of tackling some of the land-based things in a similar way? One area that I know means a lot to young men is hunting. It's not as relevant for many of the women in Northwest Coast societies, but often the young boys are the hardest ones to keep involved and in the culture.
We actually have stories of women hunting deers. So yeah, it's not only the men, but yeah, that will be another project.
Because it's got a completely different sort of landscape, and yet it is integral to almost every aspect of communication in the culture. Revolves around having, you know, to gather food, and this is like the one place where you see almost everything come up together.
That's true.
In the food gathering world.
The difference there is that it's not so, it's not so, people don't engage in that kind of activities so much as in canoe nowadays, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a very interesting domain that, you know, maybe I can, if I have the time to do it.
Once you're finished with all of it, which will be soon.
I can finish that next week.
This is a great framework. I'm just thinking of it and how we can adapt it to our languages, our different content areas. So from the start of the web page and getting all the documentation and then all the linguistic analysis, how long did that take?
Well, I can't really say, because we gathered much information, even, or my supervisor and Tom Lupari, they gathered information before I was even born, right? So I'm dealing with stuff like that, right? And then, I started more or less since I moved to Vancouver and started working with the community over there, which is in August. But there was much work before that. Yes.
Are there like language classes that are using this material, like the ICE vocabulary list that you made, to like go through and like actually get the people like engaging and like using?
Not specifically with this information yet, but we used several. We have language courses going on in Duncan, BC, on Vancouver Island, and we used parts of the information from the webpage for those courses there. Yeah. But yeah, it'd be interesting to make a separate course just with this data sync.
Yeah. I was wondering about, you know, getting the young people you're talking about to and keeping them on the website, whether things like, you know, tapping into competition, like, you know, how to row faster and beat your opponents,
yeah,
or the league of, you know, the races of this summer,
yes,
or is that sort
That's
of thing?
All part of the webpage, yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
cool.
And I mean, Willie Seymour himself, he was a champion in his
right.
time.
Right.
Yeah. You couldn't tell from the picture I just showed.
Have you yourself participated in the pulling?
Training? I came to Vancouver a bit just after the season, but I'm intending to participate.
They will accept you into that.
Yes, I've been in canoes there too, but it was kind of like after the racing season. So yeah.
Lydia?
I think it's really interesting. You've created this amazing digital resource here. And your goal at the beginning, you said, is to kind of bring the language classes to the students for something that they find interesting, that they are engaged with, that they're already doing. So it's kind of neat that the resource you've created is digital, but the use that you have for it is to take it out of the digital world.
Yeah, it's more like reference materials. Right, it's more like reference. It was more like it's more conceived as reference materials that they can use beyond the training. But then we want to encourage the coaches to use those information, you know, those data in their practices, you know. And at least, I mean, you can easily start by just using, you know, by just speaking whole commitment when you in the commands, right? You know, instead of, you know, you don't have to say switch. Right. Because it's hope.
Do you have plans to sort of abstract this out? It would be nice for everybody on the Northwest Coast,
yeah,
and probably in most maritime societies with endangered languages, to have sort of an abstract of how this stuff goes, and
yeah,
places where, you know, you can, oh, I know where to get that information already, and I can put this together and sort of, you know, layer it out into a reference for any society that's heavily invested in canoeing.
You think like a template or something?
Yeah, something like that. Like, this is what,
yeah,
the things that go in this area, you know.
Right. That was my intention originally, but then I had to focus in on this actual culture, right, and a community, because, you know, otherwise it gets much bigger, right?
Okay.
But yeah, that's the intention.
I was wondering who is hosting the website and how ongoing / permanent is that,
yeah,
hosting agreement?
Well, right now it's on my supervisor, Donna Gertz, her webpage. But as I said, it's not publicly available right now. So the aim is that we don't just want to take material out that are culturally kind of delicate, but we thought that we might want to just give restricted access to certain parts of the web page, right?
And how will that be hosted? Because your supervisor might go, or the university decides to close down extraneous web pages or something. So is,
yeah,
there a long-term management strategy for that?
Not yet.
Okay.
We have time for another question.
Yeah.
I guess you have the word immersion in your title, and
yeah,
I just wondered, the students that are participating in this program, do they have some kind of a language base already, or
yes,
how are they?
Yes, they all, right. So as you also saw in the vocabulary list that I gave, I only gave the keywords and not, you know, every single word. And I already assumed that they have certain knowledge of the language, right? Which isn't assuming too much, because they it's obligatory for them to take language courses in primary and middle school, I think. They don't learn too much. I mean, they learn lexical items. They know like basic color terms, animals, kinship terms, and stuff like that. So they hear the language and they're familiar with it, but they can't necessarily speak it. So we don't have to start from zero. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I just wonder, how do you structure it so there is really no English?
Well, for certain parts, for example, for the narratives, I don't think it's possible to leave out the English, generally. But for certain parts, like the race locations, or for example, if we have recordings of the stroke types, we don't really need to give the English either, right? I'm not sure if it would even help. You're learning that. So the English, that's a crying stroke. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Well, that's all. Let's thank Kevin for a very interesting talk.